Hello, everyone, and welcome to the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast. I'm Ralph Russo, the college football writer with the Associated Press. This week on the show, a first-time guest. Tom Fornelli writes about college football for CBS Sports and is one of the co-hosts of the Cover 3 podcast. Tom joins me to talk about last year's flops. Teams like Florida, Wisconsin, USC, Miami, LSU, Iowa State, Indiana, teams that started the season ranked and ended up finishing the season unranked. Which of those teams has a chance for a bounce back in 2022, and what does a bounce back look like for each of those schools? Thanks for listening to the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast. You can find us on appodcast.com, where you can find my colleague Rob Motti's NFL podcast. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, just about anywhere you like to get your pods. If you like what you hear, please take a minute, please, give us a good review and rating. It helps more college football fans find us, and it helps us find more college football fans. And away we go. Joining me this week on the podcast, a first-time guest, but I'm a longtime follower and enjoyer of his enjoyer. I enjoy very much his work. Tom Fornelli covers and writes about college football, podcasts about college football for CBS Sports. We got a chance to meet in person at the last national championship game in Indianapolis. Tom is much taller in real life than he is on Twitter. I don't know what that means, but I didn't anticipate you being quite so tall in real life. But I'm happy that we finally had you on this podcast. I've tried a couple of times. Schedules didn't work out, but I'm really glad that you're able to carve out some time for me this week, Tom.
Well, you know, it's like, as two Italians, we're not used to being around tall people because Italians generally aren't very tall. So when you see a guy who's Italian online, you just assume he's probably going to be somewhere between 5'7", 5'10". That's usually where they fall. But I'm actually surprised by my own height because I went to the doctor 2 months ago for my annual physical and I grew a half inch in the last year. So
wait a second.
Apparently that's not done.
You're a young man, Tom. You're younger than
not
I am.
Not that young.
But yeah. But I would have thought you would have been out of your growth spurt point. Are you just a very large toddler? Am I realizing that you are actually 12 years old, but you're a man boy? Like,
I think my posture just improved. Like, I don't know, but I'd gone the year before and I was 6'1" and a half. I went there for the physical today. And again, you know, barefoot, same room I'd been in the year before. Suddenly I'm 6'2". So even my doctor was kind of like, I don't know what's happening here, but you're a half inch taller.
Maybe it was the pandemic. A lot of time inside laying on the couch. You just had some time. You literally had time to grow.
Yeah, that's side effect of COVID. Little discussed. You grow half an inch.
All right. So we brought you on to talk about college football because that's what we do here. And, you know, it's that time of the year where we're just talking about stuff, right? It's all basically previewing in some way, shape or form. We are previewing the 2022 season and we do it for about 5 months. And then 3 weeks into the 2022 season, we realize all that stuff we talked about for about 5 months, completely useless. Mm-hmm. However, so we move on. The topic I wanted to talk to you about is bounce back teams that we had high expectations for last year. So you have to, anytime you talk about things like that, you have to define it. So the definition would be a team that started last year ranked, ended the season unranked. We call them flops. Now, some flops are worse than others. Texas A&M, for example, was a flop team last year under that definition, started the year ranked number 7, ended 8-4 outside the rankings. But generally speaking, relative to other flops, not quite so bad. Mm-hmm. I mean, the list includes Indiana, Iowa State, Florida, USC. So as opposed to going through the list here and sort of saying which ones you like, which ones you don't like, you know, you kind of know the teams, that the pool that we're swimming in here. Which of these teams do you sort of look through and say, man, I think there could be a bounce back available there for this team? I think there's this team that crashed last year that I'm thinking might be a little better this year.
Well, there were 14 teams last year that were in the preseason AP poll that finished unranked. So I think you, first of all, need to do a better job of getting your voters, you know, getting them in line. Like, they clearly don't know what they're doing.
I thought you were going to make me personally apologize for just everything, for just the entire poll. Like, personally.
I mean, if you want to offer it, I will listen to it and accept it and acknowledge it, but I'm not going to force you to do it.
The thing is, and just for clarity's sake, that is high. Like, usually you get about 10. The average, and I've been doing this for a long time, the average is about 10, maybe 11 teams per year start the season ranked, end it unranked. When you start getting more towards 14, 15, that's a pretty volatile poll.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for this exercise, of the 14, there are two teams I'm throwing out completely, not even considering. Indiana and Arizona State, they're not going to start the season ranked. They're not going to finish the season ranked. I just don't see it happening. And honestly, of the other 12 teams, I feel like they all have a legitimate shot of finishing ranked. But for the sake of this exercise, I'm also eliminating Coastal Carolina, Washington, North Carolina, Iowa State. Not saying they're not going to be ranked, just saying compared to the other teams that we can talk about, I think they're the least likely. And I think the most likely one is the one you've already mentioned. I look at Texas A&M, and they finished 8-4 last year. They finished outside the AP poll. They finished 25 in that poll. Like, I don't know, can we mention the other poll here?
I prefer not to.
All right. Well, they finished 25 in something else.
As far as I'm concerned, there is only one poll.
But when I look at this team this year, I mean, obviously there's plenty of buzz around the Aggies. Jimbo, you know, depending on, according to Nick, he bought a great recruiting class, but no matter how he secured the commitments or, you know, convinced them, whether it was just, you know, trust, faith, belief, money, whatever you want it to be, the fact is that they have stacked together a couple of very strong recruiting classes in the last few years. And there's nothing that leads to more success. There's no stronger correlation between success on the field than recruiting. And I think that we're going to see them take a step forward. But the problems there, if there are any, is that they are still in the SEC West. So they do still have a pretty tough road to hoe. But when you look at the situation with the talent that they have defensively, they're probably still going to be stellar. Like, I know Elko's left, but there's too many good players in that team to think that they're going to fall off. My concern is offensively, and that shouldn't be the case considering Jimbo Fisher and his background as a quarterback's coach and an offensive coordinator. But the fact of the matter is, and it's been the case at the end of his tenure at Florida State, and it was been the case ever since he came to Texas A&M, Jimbo's offense is really complicated. And in the college environment, when you don't have like the endless amount of time like you do in the NFL, where your quarterback can basically just live at the facility and do nothing but study the playbook, it's hard for a college kid to balance his life off the field and on the field with the hours he's allowed to get a lot of the intricacies of this passing attack down. And I think we've seen the problems of that with Texas A&M, where last year they ranked 95th in the country in passing explosiveness on offense. Like, they can run the ball well, but they have not. It's a lot of dinking and dunking and a lack of big plays in the passing game. They were 75th in the country in points scored per drive. They were 113th in red zone touchdown rate. So there's a lot of conversation around Max Johnson, Haynes King, Connor Wegman, who's going to be the starting quarterback. I lean Haynes King. Honestly, I don't think it's going to matter that much. It's really just going to depend about the offense and whether Jimbo's willing to simplify things and make it easier. But then when you do look at the schedule, I think October is going to be crucial for the Aggies, because they start off relatively soft, but then they get into October and they've got three straight road games against Mississippi, the big one against Alabama, and South Carolina, or Mississippi State, the big one against Alabama, and then they finish with South Carolina after that. So this is a team that could easily go 8-4 again. It could also go 10-2 or 11-1.
So last week on the podcast, talked a little bit about Texas A&M with Chris Felica, who actually found that the Bear believed he took them as an under on his over-unders. I asked him to take five overs, five unders, and he had them under 8.5. And without completely redoing that conversation I had last week with him, I am concerned about Jimbo being able to find and develop receivers, because they haven't done mm-hmm. that very well at Texas A&M, nor did they do it very well at his tenure at the end of his tenure at Florida State. And there is also just a whole other conversation, again, without completely redoing it, about expectations relative to success and the fact that they're probably more of a 2023 team. But if you're paying a guy as much as they're paying Jimbo and you're in year five, we're really not here for, okay, one more year, you're going to be really good. Okay, one more year, and you're going to be really good. So I find Texas A&M to be one of the more fascinating teams in the country, just generally speaking. But you have great points in the Aggies. I'm going to push you away from the Aggies before we become completely a Texas A&M podcast and I end up getting bought up by TexAggs, which might not be the worst thing in the world, actually. Maybe an NIL deal from TexAggs I'm absolutely open for.
Billy Lucci's going to come after us. He's going to call us Texas grads if we don't say anything nice.
So after the Aggies, I know there's also a pool here of potential bounce back teams. I'm interested to see where you are on some of these potential bounce back teams with new coaches.
Well, I think USC is obvious the most popular choice as being like it's been the college football playoff dark horse. It's a team that is, you know, because
what do you think Lincoln about that? Riley, what do you think about that whole idea of college football playoff dark horse?
I get it. I'm not completely sold.
Okay.
Because I think Lincoln, I mean, we know what Lincoln Riley did at Oklahoma. Like he came in at a time as the offensive coordinator when Bob Stoops recognized things were falling off a little bit and he brought him in, revitalized the offense, and it completely, you know, revitalized the entire program. It made them, you know, a playoff regular, a contender at the start of the college football playoff era. And I think that when he goes to USC and you look at everything he's brought with him, you know, with Caleb Williams and a bunch of transfers on offense, I have no doubt in my mind USC is going to score points. But this is a team that went 4-8 last year, and it went 4-8 for a few reasons. One was the head coaching situation, all the off the field distractions and an interim coach and players just kind of wondering, you know, what their future was. Am I going to stay here? Am I going to leave? You know, what's the best option for me? But it was also because that defense was awful. I mean, that was a defense that just statistically, they finished 113th nationally in success rate. They finished 107th in points allowed per drive, and they were 120th in the red zone. And if you look at everything Lincoln has done, he's really improved that offense. I haven't seen much reason to believe that that defense is going to take a significant step forward in 2022. So it might be one of those situations where, yeah, they're going to score 50 points a game, but they might be giving up 40 something. And how often are you going to be able to win doing that? Will you be able to consistently do it enough to not only win the Pac-12, but win the Pac-12 at a rate that would get you to the college football playoff? And I don't see that happening. I think USC is going to improve. I don't know that they're guaranteed to win the Pac-12 South. I don't know that they're guaranteed to win the Pac-12. I don't know that they're guaranteed to get to 10 wins. I think USC could go 8-4 or 9-3, finish the season ranked. And that is a huge step forward. But I think that's more realistic than what I've heard a lot of people who think this is a team that's going to be going to the playoff and winning the Pac-12. Because aside from all those numbers on the defensive side, if you look at the schedule, I mean, they have their annual game against Notre Dame. That's at home this year. That'll finish the regular season, but that's not going to be an easy game. And you look in the road, they've got Stanford on the road, which they tend to struggle with. You've got Utah on the road, which is, until in my mind, they're the champ in that conference until somebody knocks them off. And I still think the Utes are going to be very good this season. And they get UCLA on the road, who I think is, you know, going to be, I don't know if I'm going to call them upper echelon Pac-12, but I think they're going to be feisty. I think they're going to be capable. So those are some tough road games. And with a defense that's as bad as that one has been and without obvious answers, I just don't see the Trojans being good enough to completely overturn things right away.
Let me ask him, what's your stance on, because as you know, as you will find out now you're on this podcast for the first time, we have a topic and sometimes we move around from the topic. Give me, what is your stance on Alex Grinch? Because I've noticed that he is a young coordinator who a few years ago, not a long time ago, was considered like, oh, wow, that's a sharp guy. Look at what he did defensively at Washington State. For Mike Leach with a bunch of undersized guys, and they were a feisty defense. Then he sort of got raised to a bigger stage at Ohio State and didn't go great. Lincoln grabs him for Oklahoma. There are signs of progress. The defense definitely got better from the time that he got there, moving away from the Mike Stoops days. But understand, Oklahoma's defense went from tire fire bad to pretty good, like pretty, like, you know, like sort of, you know, a feisty defense, right? They had some pretty good years. My sense is that there's a lot of folks who kind of look at Alex Grinch and think like, this guy's reputation is a little bigger than his production. So I don't know if you've got a passionate stance on Alex Grinch, but I'm kind of wondering what your thoughts on him are.
I tend to side more towards that he's not getting the kind of results I would expect considering what he's had to work with. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, what he did at Washington State, obviously, like you said, it got him on the map because he had fantastic results there considering what he had to work with. Ohio State was kind of a mixed bag. And then Oklahoma, he definitely improved what that defense had been. And I think that's something that matters. It's just when you also look at like the NFL draft, like we're not seeing many Big 12 players going to the NFL much in general. We've seen lots of Oklahoma offensive players go, but you've seen quite a bit of Sooners defensive players go to the NFL and get drafted as well.
Last couple of years that picked up. Yes.
Yeah. And so like, that's a good sign for the development, but it's also like, well, if they've got like this much talent, shouldn't they be a little better than they had been? And so I'm not writing Alex Grinch off. I don't think that he's a flop. I don't think any of that stuff is true, but I do think that I would like to see some better results. And you know what, if he goes to USC this year and they make the same kind of improvement that they had at Oklahoma in his first year, I would take that as a great sign if I'm a USC fan. And I would take that as a great sign for Alex Grinch as a coach, because that would be twice where he's taken over, you know, terrible defenses and improved them right away. It's just, I don't see this as being a defense that's going to be, you know, top 40. But if he gets them up just to average after where they were last year, that's a great sign.
Oh, in the Pac-12, you add that with Caleb Williams, Jordan Addison, and a really lightning offense. And I think that's where, so I'm not as bullish on USC as others. I'm probably closer to where you are in USC, which is I kind of need to see it. You know, I just, all this turnover, all these questions on both lines. So the offensive line's probably gotten a little bit of a short shrift in the offseason. They have a couple of pretty good players on that offensive line. But I also look at a star quarterback that can throw up really big numbers. Like, that might be enough to win 9 or 10 games and to maybe even get to 10 wins, maybe even beat Utah, which I know the Utah fans are going to hear this and be like, what? So, you know, I let's put it this way. If I think if Utah is the best team in the conference, that's a gettable conference.
Yes.
That's no slight to Utah, but they're not Alabama. They're not vintage Clemson. If that's your best team, then that's a place where there's some room to grow. And that's where I am with USC. Let me pair these two schools up for you because it makes sense since they're both in the same state and they both have new coaches. And that's Florida and Miami. Both of those teams flopped last year. They both started ranked and pretty significantly, though, at least Miami toward the end of the season had, you could see a path to Miami possibly being better regardless of who the coach would be, because you could see some young players. But when you see a Miami under Mario Cristobal in the short term this year and Florida under Billy Napier in the short term this year, which do you see having a better chance of sort of putting together a year that could lead him to a nice ranking at the end of the year?
I would go Miami this year. I think that just right away, I mean, it's the situation that they're in the ACC, particularly in the coastal. I think that you just have an easier kind of, you know, a softer landing to start, because like Florida, you know, they've got to deal with Georgia. If you look at the rest of their conference schedule, they've got Tennessee on the road. They've got A&M on the road. They got Florida State on the road, and they're getting LSU. And you compare that to what Miami's going to play. Yes, they also have A&M on the road and Clemson on the road, but the rest of the schedule is much more manageable. And I also think if you look at the situation at quarterback, which is huge, it's hard to argue that Miami has the much more, you know, solidified spot at QB as far as what we can expect, in that Tyler Van Dyke might prove to be the best quarterback in the ACC this year. I mean, I thought he was very good last year. I was very impressed with him in both his ability to push the ball vertically, but I've seen a lot of quarterbacks who could push the ball down the field with accuracy who can't throw a 5-yard slant to save their lives. Tyler Van Dyke has shown the ability to throw the underneath stuff just as well as he throws down the field. And I think that's huge. I think that's key for any offense this day. My concern, though, is I have seen Miami quarterbacks do that as freshmen before. And I have thought, oh, wow, this guy is going to take a step forward. He's going to have a great career. Like, I'm thinking of Brad Keyer right off the top of my head. And then that guy never takes a step forward. So I have a little bit of hesitancy to just expect Van Dyke to be great, although I do think he can be. And another part to that is, will his coach let him be? Because Mario Cristobal, my one problem with Mario as a head coach has always been he's way too conservative when it comes to game decisions and what he allows his teams to do. Like, he's too often tried to rely on his defense to win games and just don't let the offense screw up. Like, you looked at what Justin Herbert was doing at Oregon, and then he goes to the NFL and all of a sudden they let him throw the ball around. And now Justin Herbert is a rookie. He's all of a sudden one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. And it's like, well, where was that guy at Oregon? Why wasn't he able to do that in college? So I do worry Mario will keep him on too tight of a leash. And I think maybe he should let him go a little bit, but defensively that team was good last year. It wasn't great. I do think they're still going to be solid there because there's a lot of talented players. I think the conference is much more manageable, but that doesn't mean I'm writing Florida off, because one of the things that I think could get lost in the mix when you're trying to think of what happened to that team last year as far as results is, it was a mess off the field in Gainesville all last year, where Dan Mullen was, he was in the fire line of sight for the entire season, where people were trying to get him fired just because they didn't like the recruiting. So it's similar to another team we'll probably talk about here in a little bit too, LSU, is where you can't really know how much that off the field stuff impacted the team's results. And I think that, Anthony Richardson is a very talented player. Will he be able to, we know he can run. How effective is he going to be throwing the ball? But we also saw Billy Napier at Louisiana had a guy like that in Levi Lewis, and didn't really impact their offense very much. He knew exactly how to use him. He played to his strengths, and that offense was one of the best in the group of five. But my concern with Florida is, I think Miami, when, again, looking at these two teams, I have more trust in Miami's depth right now than I do Florida's. I think if Florida stays healthy, it could have a very, it could be the second best team in the East. It could be a team that approaches 8-9 wins. If they have to deal with injuries, it could get ugly, because I just don't know how much there is you can rely on behind that, the first 22 players on the depth chart.
So the interesting thing about Miami, I like your point about what they allow Tyler Van Dyke to do. So, right, Mario wants to, and this is where he did well at Oregon, and quite frankly reshaped Oregon in a way that was beneficial to them and ascending in the Pac-12. Built up those offensive line, ran the ball more than they maybe, or in a way that they hadn't before under Chip, and became a more physical team. So, you're right. I think he may have been a little too tight on the reins with Justin Herbert, but they created a strength offensively that I thought made them stand out in the Pac-12. I don't think, I'm sure that's what he wants at Miami, but I don't know if they have it this year. Or in other words, if he's going to say, this is what I want my team to be, I want my team to be really physical up front, and we're going to run the ball, and we're going to be that type of team, that he probably doesn't have that yet at Miami. I know he doesn't have that yet at Miami. So he's going to have to unleash Tyler Van Dyke for that team to be successful. So you're right. I think it'll be interesting to see how comfortable he is unleashing him and riding the young quarterback. I would also say, would you be entirely shocked if by the end of the year, Anthony Richardson is considered the far better, the clearly better prospect than Tyler Van Dyke? Because I think that kid's got a ton of talent that has been untapped. He, to me, seems like one of the could-go-any-way players in the country. Like, that is a player who could tip the scales in the SEC, not to the point where Florida catches up to Georgia, but Florida could be a rocket ship if that guy if they tap into the talent of Anthony Richardson, because I think it's a wealth.
Yeah, I don't think he will be the better of the two by the end of the season. But if he does, no, I won't be shocked about it at all, because you're right. He is a very talented player, and he's the kind of guy who, just with his legs, like, when things break down, and part of the fun of college football is things break down a lot, It makes the game entertaining. He's somebody who could just make something incredible happen. He could score from just about anywhere on the field if he gets a chance to. If you leave him a lane, he could take it, and he's gone. Good luck trying to chase him. So if he could just not, he doesn't have to be a top quarterback in the country. He doesn't have to be like the, as far as passing and throwing, he doesn't have to be like an NFL prospect from that. But if he could just take the step forward where defenses have to at least respect his arm and they can't just crowd the box with eight or nine guys and dare him to throw past him or run into it, then yeah, that's a Florida offense that will be able to put up points. And I think defensively, they're still going to be pretty good. But again, like I said, I think depth more than anything. I think Richardson is going to take a step forward. I think he's too talented not to improve on what we saw last year. So I do expect that to happen. It's just how large of a leap, I don't know. But like you said, if he's better than Van Dyke at the end of the season, or he has a better season, it won't shock me at all.
All right, so if you're taking one or the other, you're taking Miami over Florida. But it does sound like you're somewhat confident on both of them, again, sort of certainly being better than last year. And again, with Florida, how could you not be better than last year? They were such a dumpster fire at the end of the year. You alluded to the other team on here that has a new coach, and that is LSU. I think, again, there's a long term here where I find myself feeling that I think Brian Kelly will get it done long term at LSU. I feel like he is just a guy with I don't care about the cultural fit and the accent and the dancing on platform with the recruit. I think all that stuff is funny, fun to laugh at. Brian Kelly is not a guy who a lot of people love to root for all the reasons, you know, that we all know about. The, you know, again, he's a little brash. He says things that make people angry, but he is also a proven good football coach at a place that where with a incredibly high ceiling, where you can win national championships with coaches who aren't really even half as smart as him. You know, like I hate to denigrate Lesson Coach O, but I mean, you've got guys who have definitely have track records who aren't as good as Brian Kelly, who have won championships before. So that's the long term projection. This year, did they even have the enough? I mean, they had to go into the transfer portal just to get enough guys. I just worry about, you know, again, you talk about depth and numbers. I think that's their biggest issue. I think there will be talent, but do they have the numbers to really be good for this year?
Yeah, I think if I'm an LSU fan, if the Tigers finish 8-4, I can't be anything less than thrilled with what happened that season, especially, you know, if they pick up an upset win somewhere, they at least hang tough with the better teams in the conference. I don't think you could be disappointed with that. Now, will that be what happens if they go 8-4? I don't know. But it's funny to me because you mentioned like Brian Kelly coming to LSU. And I've heard that too, where people are like, well, I don't know if he's a cultural fit. And if they get off to a slow start, that might work against him. And I'm sitting there like, is there a better cultural fit for LSU than Ed Orgeron? Because that guy won a national title and they fired him 2 years later. So I don't really think that matters all that much as far as the cultural fit. It's just going to be, do you win enough games? And I agree with you in that I don't think that it's too hard to know, because first of all, kind of like the Florida situation, how much of last year do we need to pay attention to, considering everything that was going on off the field and guys who were missing time, and whether that was, you know, kind of a situation where it was they're actually hurt, or if they were just kind of punting on the year because they realized, I'm going to go to the NFL, or none of this matters anyway because we've got a dead coach walking. But I think that with the holes, with all the transfers coming in, all that kind of stuff, it's going to be hard to have too high of an expectation for LSU in 2022. But going to the long term, I agree with you on Brian Kelly in that I think he's kind of he's underrated for everything he did, because the way I look at it is he did such a good job at Notre Dame that you kind of forget what a mess Notre Dame was when he got there. Like, that was a program that really hadn't done anything for 20 years. It was just every single year it was the team that was overrated. And then they would, you know, maybe they would win 9 games, but they would usually lose 4, 5, 6, 7, sometimes more. And he came in, he got them to a BCS title game. He got them to the playoff twice in 3 years. Even had to take them to the ACC for a year, went undefeated in the ACC. It's like Brian Kelly is one of the best coaches in the country. And I think long term, as long as LSU doesn't get impatient or stupid, that's going to be a team competing for more national titles, probably in a hurry. 2 to 3 years, I think they're going to be in the playoff hunt again. So, I like their long-term prospects under Kelly a lot more than I like the short-term.
Yeah, and you know, the interesting thing there when you talk about some of these SEC teams that were flops and looking for bounce backs, you know, Florida, LSU, Texas A&M, they all have to play each other. Mm-hmm. So at a certain point, they will determine the the success of their seasons will be determined by what they do against each other. Again, my sense is that LSU probably has my sense of, if I was to sort of compare LSU and Florida, and again, I would sort of say, okay, which one do you take? It's easy to take Florida because they're in the easier side of the conference, but I don't know. I feel like there was enough high end talent on LSU so that they could maybe make a bigger bounce back. Again, not necessarily expecting, 9 or 10 wins, but 8 sounds about right. And I think that's a place where LSU can get this year. So those are the schools. I think we covered most of the schools with the new coaches. The other one that sort of jumps out at me here, that it's been a weird last 2 years for Penn State. The pandemic year, no school had a worse pandemic year as far as the football product than Penn State, because they could have been one of the best teams in the country. They lose Micah Parsons. They lose their best running back. It was just such a disaster in every way. And the fact that they managed to piece it together and win 4 games at the end, was, I guess, admirable in some way, shape, or form. And then last year, the funny thing is with Penn State last year is they start the season by beating Wisconsin on the road, and they beat Auburn, and you find yourself going like, wow, like this is the bounce back they were looking for. They've sort of put the pandemic season behind them, and boy, we are ready to roll. And then Sean Clifford gets hurt against Iowa, and everything sort of falls apart again. So it's been a weird couple of years for James Franklin, who came out of it with a large contract extension. Where do you stand on Penn State for a bounce back? Again, beyond just like 7-5, do you think they can get back to that 9-win range in 2022?
I do. I'm high on the Nittany Lions going into this season. And it's because, like you were talking about there, like at the start of they finished 2020 well. And when it comes to Pac-12 and Big Ten teams, I don't really care about anything that happened in 2020, as far as at least considering what it means going forward. Like, I feel like that is just kind of like a crazy year where you can't take anything seriously for either of those conferences. But they finished that season well, and they start, like you said, they started last season well. Clifford got hurt and things fell apart. I think that if Clifford gets hurt again this year, they're better equipped to handle it, because Christian Velue played well enough. He's got enough experience for it. And that coaching staff seems to be pretty high on him, where they feel comfortable with him. They've got Drew Allar, who's the 5-star, who maybe he suddenly ascends to the number 2. And
I was going to say that's the really interesting dude there, right? I mean, Allar or Allar? Either way,
I believe it's Allar, but so, I don't know for sure.
I mean, if you get that guy up and running by, mid-season, whether if Clifford either struggles or there's an injury situation, maybe the future is now. So, again, I'm not sure if that's the direction that they go, but it certainly makes things a lot more interesting when you look beyond Clifford.
Mm-hmm. But even with Clifford, like I look at this as a situation where, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but like, let's look at what happened with Kenny Pickett last year. It was a guy who, for the first, whatever, 20 seasons of his college career was good, but he wasn't anything special. And then just
when he took over for Dan Marino, really things were looking encouraging, though. Maybe there seemed to be a ceiling there.
Yeah. And then things just clicked, new offense, Jordan Addison emerging as a great playmaker. And he took off, had a great season. I don't think Sean Clifford's going to have that same type of year, but like, this is the first time in Clifford's career at Penn State in which he's had the same offensive coordinator 2 years in a row. And I think we shouldn't overlook what that could do as far as his familiarity with the offense and his ability to run and his ability to run it and be effective in it. And I think that Clifford is not going to be a Heisman contender. He's not going to be a early NFL draft pick, but he's a perfectly capable college quarterback who's probably better than he looks numbers wise because he's been playing behind a bad offensive line without any real threat of a run game the last 2 years. So you look at that this year, and Clifford will be the starter, I'm assuming, when the season begins. But the one thing that I think, we talked about Allar, he's a 5-star that everybody at Penn State fans are talking about. There's another 5-star in the recruiting class that I think is going to have a bigger impact, and it's running back Nick Singleton, because that's what Penn State has lacked the last few years, the game breaker at running back, because they've had bad offensive lines a lot in recent years. But when they had Saquon Barkley and Miles Sanders, it didn't matter that much because those were guys who could make stuff happen, whether you blocked for them or not. And Singleton is that kind of talent. So I think that is a huge thing for them offensively. And I think defensively, another big loss that they had, we mentioned the Clifford injury. I thought when Mustafa, like that defense was good overall, but that defense was great before Mustafa got hurt.
That's
and
fair.
Mustafa will be back anchoring the middle of that defensive line. And I think that will be huge for them. They will be much more difficult to move the ball against. So I look at that. Then you start looking at the schedule. They get Ohio State and Michigan State at home. The draw from the west of Purdue, Northwestern, Minnesota is probably as good as you can hope for when you would dodge both Iowa and Wisconsin. So especially when you play in the east and you already have to play Ohio State, Michigan State, and Michigan. So I look at this team. I think the Nittany Lions are going to win at least 9 games. I think Ohio State's your clear favorite in the Big Ten. I think Michigan is still probably your second best team, but I think Penn State could be the second best team in the conference too. So that's I'm higher on them, I think, than I am just about anybody else on this list.
Let me, I know you're at heart, you're a Big Ten West guy with your heart in Champaign, but I want to turn to the Big Ten West for the team that we had become sort of accustomed to just, sort of pencil in Wisconsin as Big Ten West favorite, pencil in Wisconsin. And again, much like the Big Ten for the pandemic year was kind of a mess, and I don't really draw too many conclusions. Wisconsin last year gets off to a slow start. Graham Mertz, not good, really.
No.
But they discover Braylon Allen, who is just from another planet. And they become the, you know, we traditionally expect Wisconsin to become, which is they are killing people on defense and they are running this 230-pound 17-year-old for 200 yards and things are rolling along. And then they get slammed by Minnesota at the end of the year. And so, again, it sort of takes – it seemed like everything was back to normal at Wisconsin and then they didn't win the West. They lose to Minnesota. And I think that leaves a lot of folks kind of looking at Wisconsin going like – it's been a couple of years now since they've really been like peak Wisconsin. They'll always be with nobody's better at being with Wisconsin than Wisconsin. They are the most Wisconsin they could possibly, but they haven't been the most Wisconsin they could possibly be. Do you sense Wisconsin getting back to peak Wisconsin? That's a lot of Wisconsin in there.
It's a lot of Wisconsin, but it's, you know, I think that they're going to be better this year. I just don't know if it's going to show up in the record because like defensively they're going to still be elite because Jim Leonard's defense has been elite through a number of different roster makeup. Like they've had guys come in, guys move on and they've replaced them. And that defense has still been suffocating. It is still terrific at getting pressure on opposing quarterbacks. It confuses quarterbacks. It forces turnovers. They're just, it's a very, very tough defense to play. And that's still going to be the case. And you mentioned Braylon Allen, who I don't know if you know, because they never mentioned it. He was only 17 years old last year. I don't know if anybody told you that.
Much like Brock Osweiler was 6'7". Right. That's it. That was
exactly.
Last year, Braylon Edwards is 17 was the Brock Osweiler of 6'7".
So if he was that good at 17, he's that good at 17. Imagine how good he's going to be at 18. But like, so I still think that they're Wisconsin. They're going to be able to run the ball all they want, all day, every day. The question will be, do they finally take a step forward in the passing attack? And that, not even a step forward, because like I feel like that's disrespectful to the guys like Jack Cohn and who came before him, who you kind of look down upon, but they were perfectly suited for that offense. And Graham Mertz showed up, highly rated recruit. You thought this is going to be, you know, Wisconsin's first elite QB. This is good, since Russell Wilson, this was going to be the guy that brought him back up to those heights. He came out in that first game of 2020 against Illinois, and it was like, oh my God, this kid's going to throw 100 touchdowns and win 5 Heismans. And he's been pretty mediocre, and maybe that's being kind since. So he needs to take a step forward for this team to really, for me to be super confident in them. But I still think that this is a team that could compete in the West. But the problem is, even if it doesn't happen, the problem is, like I mentioned, the soft draw that Penn State got from the West, Wisconsin is not getting the same favors from the East.
Yeah.
They don't have to play Penn State, but they have to play both Ohio State and Michigan State, and they're getting them both on the road. They're also getting Iowa and Nebraska, 2 games which will be pivotal in the West division, on the road. So I think they will be a better, more complete team this year. but I don't know that I could say that means they're going to win more games just because that schedule is going to be tough. I think Minnesota is still going to be tough. I think Purdue is not going to be as good as they were record-wise, but I still think Purdue's tough. I think Illinois is getting better. I don't think Northwestern is as bad as it looked last year, though it might be.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody in that division is so good that you can clearly say they're the best team. I think Wisconsin should be the favorite, and I think Wisconsin probably wins the division more often than anybody else, but I think they're going to have three or four losses when they do it, too.
Let me make you talk about your beloved Illini here, because I was trying to, you know, again, sort of looking through teams and rosters and schedules, I found myself thinking like, oh yeah, I think there's a way for Illinois to be better this year. But then I got caught on the whole schedule game and found myself thinking, I don't know if I see a ton of wins here. You know, did I love the Brett Bielema hire? Well, it depends on how I look at it. I like having Brett Bielema back in college football. I think he is a fun character and an interesting guy, and I think it's nice to have him around college football. I like the idea of, you know, listen, if you want to figure out how to win the Big Ten West, hire somebody who's won in the Big Ten West. Mm-hmm. But I also found myself thinking like, oh, you know, retread kind of thing going on there. And is that really the way you want to go if you're Illinois? Maybe you need to do something a little different. Maybe you need to think a little outside the box with Illinois because it's been a long time since they've been good. So what's your read on your beloved Illini?
I think that Bielema is a great hire for Illinois in that Illinois' goal right now shouldn't be winning the Big Ten West. It should just be getting the bowl games. Mm-hmm. And because it's a program that has really struggled just to have that kind of consistent success of going 6-6 every single year. This is a team that, you know, is going 3-9, 2-10. And I think that Bielema, whether he ever gets them to the heights he had Wisconsin, is still a very good hire because he knows what it takes to win in that division. He knows how to recruit the area. And I think that if you look at what's happened off the field so far, like recruiting wise, he's doing a very good job of recruiting locally, which is something that Lovie Smith had completely stopped doing entirely. And then I think defensively last year, this was a team that it got off to a really slow start. And then it just kind of, it completely changed its scheme defensively. And Ryan Walters, the defensive coordinator, deserves a lot of credit for it because after they got walloped by Virginia, they realized they couldn't keep doing the things that they were doing. They made some changes. And then from that point on, it didn't get, you know, nobody really noticed it because nobody notices Illinois football. But that was one of the best defenses in the Big Ten for the rest of the season. Like they went on the road and they beat Penn State in 9 overtimes and they completely shut Penn State down. That's the only reason they won that game because they weren't able to move the ball themselves on offense. The problem was when Bielema came in, he had said, you know, he wanted to be more modern with the offense. Like it wasn't just going to be the same kind of stuff you saw at Wisconsin, but his offensive coordinator hire and the personnel they had kind of limited him to being that same kind of caveman football that they had been. So after last year, they go 5-7, which is about, you know, their win total was 3.5. So they exceeded expectations.
No doubt.
They could have won a few more games. They were close to getting to a bowl game, but Bielema made a change at offensive coordinator. He brought in Barry Lunney, who was the offensive coordinator at UTSA, who he was familiar with because the two of them worked at Arkansas, because Lunney's going to run the kind of offense that he wanted.
And Lunney beat them last year. Lunney and UTSA beat them last year.
Lunney is one of the reasons they decided they needed to change their defensive approach because they watched him put up, I think it was 37 points in Champaign. So I think that there's a reason to think that this is a team. The schedule is not easy. So I'm not going to sit here and say, I think Illinois is going bowling. Like in fact, today we published a story. I had to do our Big Ten win totals. I've got Illinois finishing 5-7, which is the over on their win total, but they can get to a bowl game. And I think the non-con games are going to be pivotal for that. If they could beat Virginia, if they can go to Indiana and that second weekend of the season on a Friday night and beat the Hoosiers, I think that they end up going bowling. If they can't, they're probably going 5-7.
You sort of tossed Indiana aside when we got into this bounce back as well. They're not bouncing back, but I do want to stick on Indiana just for a second here. And I noticed you had done the win total, so clearly you have done a little prep work on Indiana, and I'll tap into that now. Was it just an illusion? I mean, was everything that and it wasn't really one season. It wasn't just the pandemic season, because the season before they had played well under Tom Allen. And for it to all come crashing down last year, I was skeptical about Indiana becoming something more than just a, you know, occasional, you know, bowl team, maybe a little more than that. In other words, last year, Indiana was number 17 in the country, I think, or 16 in the country heading into the season. And I was not buying that. I was shorting Indiana all every which way. But I also didn't think 2-10. And I think that and it just sort of speaks to the fact that, okay, you have this program that was probably punching above its weight, and then everything goes wrong. Your quarterback gets hurt. You have a sea of injuries. You lose a couple of close games early, and it all falls apart. Is there enough there? Like, Tom Allen, I don't think got stupid. They changed some coordinators. Is there enough there for them to get back to being sort of respectable Indiana again? Or are we just going back to like, oh, in a couple of years, they'll fire Tom Allen because it's just Indiana and just, Indiana just can't be good at football?
I am 100% with you as far as last year. Like, I knew they weren't going to be as good as they were in 2020 because a lot of what happened in 2020 just wasn't sustainable. Like, I can't remember what the exact stat was, but I had Indiana fans yelling at me that entire season because they just wanted to enjoy the fact that their team was winning a bunch of games and they weren't used to it happening. I was just like, well, they're also forcing turnovers at a ridiculously high rate that isn't sustainable. And if you look at their points off, like, one a stat I love looking at as far as predicting how sustainable a team's success or its lack of it is points off turnover margin, because turnovers are so important to this game. Coaches care about them for a reason. And their points off turnover margin, which is how many points they scored off turnovers minus how many points their opponent scored off turnovers, was something ridiculous. Like, it was the highest in the nation, and it was the highest in a large fashion. And considering that the Big Ten played fewer games that year, even drove the point home further. But that said, I did not see 2-10 and 0-9 in the Big Ten coming. And I think that this is a season where we're probably going to see a bounce back. I've got them going 5-7. I think that 4-8 to 6-6 is probably your sweet spot for this team. So I don't think we're going to see 2020 again. I don't think we're going to see bottom of the barrel again. I think we're going to see a competent, feisty team that is just not as good talent-wise as a lot of the other teams who happens to be in the wrong division. And if I'm Tom Allen and a Hoosier fan, I am just kind of sending Kevin Warren emails every day saying, absolutely, get rid of divisions and put us in a pod with Northwestern, Purdue, and Illinois.
You know, frankly, and I, as being here in the Northeast, and I get a lot of Rutgers, you know, people, you know, who I know. And so I probably talk Rutgers football more than most national college football writers. But it's the same story here. Like, they're trying to build a program. To build a program, you have to sort of build some winning culture, some winning momentum, some proof of concept wins, right? You have to show, you know, to continue to get to build on your recruiting. You have to show recruits that you can win some games. And when you're starting every season with basically four automatic losses on your schedule, because almost every year you're not going to beat Ohio State, Michigan, Michigan State, Penn State. Maybe you'll get one of those games if you're lucky because one of those teams is down. But almost every year you're starting behind the eight ball with four losses. And that's essentially where Indiana was. Now, again, of course, Tom, you're a terrible person for peeing on their parade when they beat Michigan for the first time in 1,000 years and they beat Penn State. And you're pointing out their turnover margin. That's just not very nice. But yeah, it's just I get your point with Indiana. They're just they're Indiana, Rutgers, and really, you know, really for the most part, the Big Ten, those some maybe even those Big Ten West teams. You just need to get that schedule fixed. Or Maryland, I should also point out, you just need to get that schedule fixed so that you're not stuck in that monster division.
Yeah, it's such a huge, like, mountain to climb when you have to face those teams, because, like you said, it's they're going to cave your skull in every single year, pretty much no matter what you do, because you can't close that gap while they're already that far ahead of you and you have to play them every year. Like, if you're Rutgers or Maryland or Indiana, you need a few years to get away from them so you can maybe go 7-5, 8-4, stack some bowl games together and show recruits, hey, look, man, there's progress here. You can come here. We can win games. We can have fun.
Yeah. Connor Bazelak is the quarterback who transferred to Indiana this year, who I think is going to be pretty interesting. He looked pretty good at Mizzou a couple of years ago, and it's not like Mizzou upgraded here. They didn't, you know, toss him to the side because they were getting somebody else good. He left, and they were in on every portal quarterback for about 2 months and really never found a good replacement. So my guess is you'll have a far more competent Indiana last year, but what you saw more was a more vintage Indiana last year, which is to say terrible Indiana. Who the other one I want to bring you back to before I let you roll here is Iowa State, because Iowa State is highly fascinating to me. I am a honk for Matt Campbell. I just think he is a terrific coach. I've always been very much in on Matt Campbell. I am surprised he is still there, but he is a different kind of dude, and USC hired Lincoln Riley. So that's why Matt Campbell is still at Iowa State. To expect Iowa State to win 9 games, win 10 games, is not fair. And last year, with what was considered one of the best teams in school history, they only went 7-5 in the regular season, lost a close bowl game to Clemson. But that seems like a disappointing season when you start top 10 and you have the best team in school history. But I am reminded that this is Iowa State. Do you think that we could still expect Iowa State to avoid sinking back to 4-5-win territory? Are they in danger of doing that this year?
I'm with you on Matt Campbell, so no. I think that as long as Matt Campbell is there, they're going to be too well coached to completely fall off the face of the earth. And ironically, I know that this will, you know, start angry phone calls in for Iowa sports radio, but they remind me a lot of Iowa under Kirk Ferentz, where it's like they're going to have down years, but their down years are going to be 6-6 and 7-5. And then, you know, every once in a while, they'll cycle up to an 8 or a 9-win season. And I think that's
I was in Ames last year for the first time, and they would sign up for that. They understand. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think they just want, they would like some peaks, but the idea of simply avoiding a total backslide, I think they would be very much down for.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know this for a fact, but Iowa State has had winning records for the last 5 seasons. Pretty sure that's the only time in program history they can say that.
That is true.
I don't think they've ever had a 5-year stretch like that. And I think Matt Campbell deserves a lot of credit for that, because that is not an easy place to win, especially when you look that you have an established Big Ten team in the state that has a much longer history than you do. So when you don't have an overly fertile recruiting area to take advantage of, you're in the as far as, you know, conference prestige, the Big 12 is considered second class and among Power 5 to the Big 10. It would be the little brother. So you're in these kind of situations. So for the fact that he's able to get players there, and then not just get them there, but develop them and put together teams that he's put together, like you said, there's a reason plenty of teams have called to gauge his interest to see if he wants to come and take over their job. There's a reason NFL teams have considered checking out Matt Campbell to gauge his interest in taking their jobs. He's a very good football coach who's running an outstanding program and has that program humming at a level where it's never really been before. But like you said, they won 9 games in 2020, and then they had all that returning experience, and there were a lot of fans who were expecting them to repeat. And I think that was overly optimistic. And I think that last year was probably what you're going to see more of. And I wouldn't be surprised if they go 8-4 this year, if they go 7-5. But in the Big 12, like, you know, they're probably not going to be playing for Big 12 titles a lot, even after Oklahoma and Texas leave.
Though it does create an interesting opportunity when Oklahoma and Texas leave. Listen, Brock Purdy was a kind of a fun college player, and he got drafted. I think he was the last pick in the draft. In fact, if I remember correctly, he was this year's Mr. Irrelevant. But I also think it was probably time. I think we've all sort of maxed out on Brock Purdy over the last four years. It appreciated him for what he was and sort of understood what he wasn't. He was an experience. He had really become one of those quarterbacks where it's like, man, this guy is just a roller coaster, man. He is. Mm-hmm. You never know what you're getting with this guy. So, and I think there is, if you talk to people out in that part of the country, I think that there is some expectation that you might actually get an improvement with Hunter Deckers, who's next in line over there, a guy who's a little bigger and maybe a little bit more polished. Now, that said, Brock Purdy put up awesome numbers. So if he is as good as Brock Purdy, that's not a bad thing. But I also think that, again, the Brock Purdy experience had sort of run its course.
I agree.
So, Tom, is there anyone else in the list before we wrap up here of these flop teams that you think, you know what? I'll give you two outs here to this question. You can give me one, or you can go one row to the other. I know this team is absolutely still stinks, or I'm really feeling good about this team. So I'll give you either of those outs. Which one that stunk last year or that flopped last year that you think, you know what, there's a lot of rebuilding to be done here and we're not going to see anything as good next year, or maybe somebody that you are pretty confident that a bounce back is coming?
I don't want to say they still stink, but I am not optimistic about Texas.
Ooh, okay. Let's talk Texas.
I think Quinn Ewers is obviously a highly rated recruit. I haven't seen him play a snap that matters yet. And when I watch, again, this is one of those things, this is just me, if I could be old man here for a minute. Like, I just would like to see a top-rated quarterback actually make throws with his feet planted and set. I feel like every single thing that they have kids doing now is having them try to make Patrick Mahomes off-platform throws. And it's like, okay, well, how about you run the offense and play it? So it's like, I need to see Quinn Ewers because I have some serious questions about his accuracy. That said, with Bijan Robinson and those receivers and Sark calling the plays, they're going to score points. The problem was, like USC, that defense was terrible last year. So it's like, will that defense be able to take enough of a step forward to really rely on them to improve upon what we saw? Or we also saw that team constantly fade in the second half, and when you see a team that fades in the second half last year, there's usually one of two reasons for it. One, you just don't have depth, or two, you're getting out coached. That other team is going to the locker room at halftime figuring you out and fixing things, and you're not doing the same. So I'm going to be interested in watching that this year to see what trends emerge there. And then I also wonder too, like, they get Alabama in the second week of the season. If they get crushed by Alabama, what does that do to the psyche of the team heading into conference play, considering that this is a team that hasn't experienced a lot of success, and maybe they're all hyped going into the year because it's a brand new season, but then you get your butt kicked in week two, and it might be easy to kind of, you know, sneak back into old habits, the ones that have kept you from winning, and you look at their conference schedule, like Oklahoma, obviously neutral site, same as every year, but on their road schedule, you're going to get a Texas Tech team that, for a team with a bad defense like Texas, I don't really want anything to do with Texas Tech this year, because I think that team is going to get back to like the old school Mike Leach, Cliff Kingsbury, let's score 1,000 points a game kind of offense. Oklahoma State's on the road. I think Kansas State is a team that's kind of a sleeper who they've got to play on the road. I won't be shocked if Texas finishes 7-5 or 8-4 again, if it's pretty much the same exact team we saw last year.
Yeah, that wouldn't make people too happy in Texas. Though you say same exact, 7-5 would be progress. Technically, that would be progress, but I don't know if it's quite the progress we the folks in Austin are hoping for. Yeah, I was just looking it up, and your colleague, Shihan, did the big 12 over-unders, and he the total for Texas is 9. I didn't notice that maybe I'm sure it's some
under.
Books. I'm sure at some books it might be 8.5, right? I'm sure you can probably find 8.5 somewhere too. Because that's just like 9 just seems like 8.5 seems reasonable. 9 seems completely outlandish, even though there's really no difference there. I would be a little apprehensive to sign up for that. But again, there's probably going to be a lot of offensive fireworks in Texas, but I don't think the folks are really, you know, that when they brought in Sark, they were looking for 7-5. So, all right. Nope. Well, so a little bit of a bounce back for you folks in Texas, but not that much. And the other thing you have to worry about with Alabama is coming out with all your guys intact, too.
Yes.
That was the other
yes.
problem. When you play Alabama, you just want to get out healthy. Mostly, you just want to get home healthy. Tom Fornelli, you can read him at CBSSports.com. You can read his his college football coverage. You can listen to him on the Cover. It's the Cover 3 podcast, correct?
Mm-hmm.
With the funny thing is Cover 3, but isn't there more than three of you on that? Am I?
Yeah.
Do I miscount that sometimes? What's going on with that, Tom?
What's even funnier is when they first started calling it the Cover 3 podcast, there were only two hosts, and then I became the third, and then Barton left to become the general manager at Vanderbilt, and we've since added Danny Cannell and Bud Elliott. So it's me, Danny, Bud, and Chip Patterson. So there's four of us on the Cover 3.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot. Boy, how much does Chip get to talk? That's what I'm wondering.
Not at all.
Because between Bud and Danny and you, I mean, even you gotta box out Danny and Bud. And, you know, I love Bud. Bud's one of my favorites. He's been on this podcast a lot. And Danny does a good job. But, man, that podcast must just go on forever. You guys must have 4-hour editions to get all your talking in.
Chip will just ask a question, and then he could generally go like take his kids to school and then come back, and the three of us will still be answering it. And then he asks the next question and we move on.
That's where you can find Tom Fornelli, or you could also find him at, I don't know, maybe a White Sox game. Okay, this is the last thing. Were you among the people chanting Fire La Russa?
Not in person.
Okay.
In spirit.
Are they really terrible? Like, because baseball season is super long. As a baseball fan, I know nobody likes baseball anymore except old men like me. And what I try to tell people who are not paying attention to the baseball season is, like, we're not even halfway done. I know it seems like we've been playing baseball for months. We're not even halfway done. The season is very long. I know you are a baseball fan. Do you think that there is time for the White Sox in a bad division to turn it around?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're getting their butts kicked right now, but I kind of anticipated that because they played late last night. The bullpen was overused, and now it's a few hours later, and they're playing a really good offense. But the division does stink. Like, Cleveland's in first now, Minnesota's right there, and then we're a few games behind. I think that over the course of 162, as long as the entire team doesn't drop dead of injuries, they'll win the division. The problem is they haven't addressed any of their glaring holes that make me think that once they get to the playoffs, they're not just going to get waxed by whatever better team they face when they get there.
Right. Them and their 78-year-old manager. That still seems weird, the whole La Russa thing. But, Tom, I appreciate you coming on, being a first-timer on this podcast. Here's the way it works. Once you agree to come on this podcast once, now you're in my Rolodex, and I get to annoy you to come on other times. So I'm just warning you in advance, there's going to be a Monday where I haven't, you know, I sort of woke up and went, I haven't booked a guest. Maybe Fornelli can come on. So you're in the mix now. I hope you don't
mind.
Sounds
good to me. Excellent. No, you know where to find me. I'll happily come back.
Well, thanks. You did a great job, Tom, and I appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me, Ralph.
And now, three and out. First down. Some interesting developments in recruiting this week, most notably, at least to me, Louisville getting a commitment from the number two running back in the class of 2023, a player named Reuben Owens from Texas. Owens was previously committed to the Longhorns. Second down, the beat goes on at Ohio State on the recruiting trail, where the Buckeyes landed 5-star receivers in consecutive days this week. Shout out to my friend Ari Wasserman from The Athletic for this Ohio State stat. Ohio State, since 2019, has signed 13 receivers who were top 100 overall prospects. 13 receivers among top 100 overall prospects since 2019. The rest of the Big Ten has signed 2 such players. Amazing. Third down is a programming note. We will have a podcast next week with my friend Bruce Feldman of Fox and The Athletic looking at the 2022 coaching carousel. That pod will be recorded in advance as I take some vacation time over the next couple of weeks. The following week of July 4th, we will have no pod, but we will return in mid-July and dive into previewing the 2022 season, conference by conference. Looking forward to talking to you then. That is the show for today. I'd like to thank my producer, John Radcliffe, for making me sound good. You can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and just about anywhere you'd like to get your pods. please follow. Please, please follow so you do not miss an episode. I am Ralph Russo, the college football writer with the Associated Press. Thanks for listening and come back for more next week of the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast.